Yes, so this is a joint work with my colleague Alexandra Lauser, and I would like to start my talk with, let's say, some brief introduction the kind of logics we consider. So we consider first order logics over words, finite and infinite words, and we have variables which range over positions in the word, and our atomic predicates are of the form some position x is labeled by A, some position x is smaller than some position y, or some position x is the immediate successor of some position y. And we also have a predicates min and max, saying that the x is the minimal, the first position, or that x is the last position. Usually one uses a constant, but since we also want to constant min and max, but since we also want to consider infinite words, the constant max and max makes no sense there. But the predicate max does. It's just always false at all positions of an infinite word. Then there are several resources in formulas. For example, there is the number of variables, there is the quantifier depth or the alternation depth. And when we consider fragments, then we restrict some of these resources. So sigma 1, for example, we have only one block of quantifiers, so existential first order logic. And it's Boolean closure, p sigma 1, it's alternation free first order logic. So we have universal and existential quantifiers, but no alternation between them. FO2 is another famous fragment. It's a first order logic with two variables. And so you might think that it's an artificial fragment, but so the main reason to consider FO2 is if you have three variables over words, then this is sufficient to express any first order definable language. Therefore, and FO2 is a strict fragment and has a lot of nice properties. And as a signature, we consider, for example, always we have the label predicates, then here we have just the linear order, here we have all of them, here we have all of them except next, for example, and so on. And so let me give you an example. So we have a two-letter alphabet gamma, and we consider the following formula. For every position x, there is a successor y, such that x and y have different labels. So of course, this is formally not a terminal in the logic, but you can, it's easy to see that you can express it. And so now, if you look at the language this formula generates, then this depends on the set of models. For example, over finite words, if you consider only a finite word models, then the language is empty. So actually, it's the empty word, but I don't want to talk about the empty word. So so the language generated is empty because the last position in the word has no successor. And over infinite words, we have exactly two words in our language. The one is, so we always have to alternate between A and B, and so one possibility is we start with an A, and the other possibility is that we start with a B. And it's also not hard to see that this is the same as saying we have no factor A, AA, and we also have a no factor BB. Therefore, since we can say we have a factor AA in sigma 1, this language here is also definable in a, let's say, simpler way by using only the Boolean closure of sigma 1 over gamma to the omega. And if we consider finite and infinite words simultaneously, so this is denoted by gamma to the infinity, which is just the union of these two, then we have, in fact, the same language. We have a, so except for a finite empty word, we have a alternating A's and B's, and we can start with an A or start with a B. But in this case, it's not the same as this term here, because here we have also some finite words in here. And in fact, this language over finite and infinite words simultaneously is not definable in this fragment. So here we could also include the linear order and the minimum predicate, and it's still not definable. And so what we are interested in is actually this kind of result. So having some fragment, having some language, how can you decide whether some language is definable in this fragment? So this is the kind of question we are interested in. And also, so as I already said, so here we can not define this language in this fragment, but so the other question is which kind of languages can we define in some fragment? And so there is a general scheme for this kind of questions, which works in a lot of settings. So we have some logical fragments, some algebra and languages, and the idea is, for example, so some famous result is that a language is of finite words is first order definable if and only if it's a syntactic monoid, so the corresponding algebra is aperiodic, if and only if the language is a star free. So and if you want to know, for example, given some MSO formula, is it equivalent to some first order formula, what can you do? You can compute this syntactic monoid and check whether it is aperiodic. If it is aperiodic, then you know it, your language is first order definable. If it's not aperiodic, then you know it's not first order definable. Therefore, usually this path here gives you a decidability. And over infinite words, there we have a, let's say, second ingredient, which is a topology. Very often, we get a combination of algebraic and topological characterizations. And again, this gives you decidability. Another good thing about this approach is very often you get the closure properties for free. For example, the class of first order definable word languages is closed under inverse homomorphisms. I don't know if there is also a direct way to see this, but you get it actually for free over this algebraic characterization. And also this approach has been extended to a lot of other structures such as trees, Mazurkiewicz traces, or more recently data words by Nicolai. And still it has been most successful over finite words. Over finite words, let me just briefly sketch which kind of fragments you have were considered. For example, FO2 has been considered, existential first order logic, it's Boolean closure. Sigma 2, it exists for all formulas. And delta 2, language is definable in delta 2 if it's definable in sigma 2, and its complement is also definable in sigma 2, which means that delta 2 is in some sense the largest subclass of sigma 2, which is closed under complement. And for all of them, the fragment where we also allow a successor has been considered. And so in some sense, the borderline today is here over finite words. The Boolean closure of sigma 2 and sigma 3, are there's no known decidable characterization for them, but there is one for over two-letter alphabets. Then some other fragments are, for example, if you don't allow the linear order, but only successor, then it's not hard to see that this is actually the same as having the Boolean closure of sigma 1 with a successor, min and max. And this has also been considered, and so if you don't allow min and max here, then this is a strict fragment which has been also there is also some intelligible characterization for this. So for us, the most important one is this one here. So this is I will show you the result in a minute. So this fragment is the closure of sigma 1. So alternation-free first order logic with all these predicates. And just to give you an idea, so a lot of people have worked on these fragments. So there's not just one result on the fragment, but essentially for every fragment there is a single paper. And there are lots of other interesting facts about them. For example, these two, so FO2 and delta 2, they coincide. Same is true for if you add successor, then they still coincide. And there are automaton models, linear temporal logics for some of them, and so on. Now, the main result of our paper is a new proof of this old result. So a language is definable in this fragment if and only if it is a Boolean combination of languages of this form where the wi are words over gamma. If and only if it's a syntactic monoid, it's in B1. Now, if you don't know what a syntactic monoid is, it's a minimal algebraic object, and you can think of it maybe as the minimal automaton. So it's not the same, but maybe have thinking about it. And B1, maybe if I have time, I will tell you what B1 is. But so all you need to know at the moment is it's some desirable algebraic property. And again, if you want to know whether some language L is definable in this fragment, what you can do is you can compute the syntactic monoid and check whether the syntactic monoid has this property B1. And so as I said, we have a new proof for this result. And this new proof we were able to generalize to infinite words. So the result is as follows. A language L is omega regular. So we have to start with some omega regular language, and the following are equivalent. It is definable in this fragment. We could also allow the max predicate here, but over infinite words, the max predicate is just always false. That's why I didn't write it here. And it's equivalent to saying that L is a Boolean combination of a language of this form, where we have this omega term at the end. And the thing which corresponds to the last line is again, the same algebraic property and some topological property. So if you don't know what this is, so you don't have to know exactly at the moment. So it's just you have one decidable property and another decidable property. And therefore, it is decidable whether omega regular language is definable in this fragment. Now, there are several related results. For example, if you have this fragment, which is just first order logic with a successor, so full first order logic with successor, it boils down to this fragment, and it's the same as having this, some algebraic property which is decidable, locally threshold testable, and this topological property as we have seen before. Then existential first order logic, so this is all over infinite words now. So of infinite words, you have again some algebraic property and some topological properties being open in the Cantor topology. So you consider it a Boolean closure without successor, then. And so in this paper, we consider this fragment, and it's again some algebraic property and the same topological property as above. And there are lots of other fragments which have been considered, and so maybe the most. Important ones are these, and for all of them we have it's almost the same. We have some algebraic property and some topological property, and at the moment, so our conjecture is that this is there is some kind of general scheme, but we don't know it yet. So we don't know whether whenever we consider some fragment and we extend it to infinite words, whether it's of this form. But let's say for all. Known cases, it's true yet. And maybe I should also say that the first decidable characterization of these two is due to Thomas Wilke in his habilitation thesis, and this is due to Nicolai, the first decidable characterization over infinite words of sigma 2. Okay, so what I'd like to show you next is another result in our paper, and I will later try to convince you that this is the result actually. So if you consider finite and infinite words simultaneously, then this language L is definable in this logic. Now here this max predicate makes sense because we also have finite words. This is the case if and only if L is a Boolean combination of languages of this form and the languages of this form. So essentially this is the infinite part and this is the finite part. But also here we have also finite words. There are also some finite words in there. And this is equivalent to having some algebraic property and some topological property over some strict Cantor topology. So there are two ways to define the Cantor topology over gamma to the infinity. And so the first one is take the usual one over gamma to the omega, which is given by base sets of this form, which means a set is open if and only if it is an arbitrary union of sets of this form. And we say a set is open in the Cantor topology over gamma to the omega. And extending this to the case of finite infinite words, you could all just replace this by infinity and this by infinity, and you get some variant of the Cantor topology. And what we do here for a strict version is we also have to include all finite words in our basis. So we have arbitrary unions of a set of this form and of a set of this form, and then we get the open sets. And here we have so set is closed. If it's a complement, it's open. Here we have arbitrary, we have countable unions over closed sets, and here we have countable intersections over open sets. And the L has this topological property, which is decidable. And as I said, what I will try to do is convince you that actually this theorem here is the most general one. So it is more general than the infinite words theorem, and it's also more general than the finite words theorem. Now you might ask, why doesn't just, let's say, everybody consider finite and infinite words simultaneously? Because, for example, logic works very well for finite and infinite words simultaneously. So it's just the same thing, some finite or infinite word model, some formula. Or here are also languages, as you can see, it works very well simultaneously. Algebra works very well if you consider finite and works, infinite words simultaneously. And also topology works very well. So what is the reason why usually one does not consider finite and infinite words simultaneously? The reason is that automata don't work as well. So because there is some notion of extended Bucci automaton, which has two kinds of final states. One kind of final state is, for example, accepting the finite words, and the other kind of final state is for accepting infinite words using some Bucci condition. Okay, so as I said, what I will try to do is convince you that this infinite theorem is more general than this omega theorem here. And the proof is not very difficult, so consider some language over infinite words only. Then, whether this language satisfies this condition or this condition is equivalent. So let's see. For example, if some language is L, so if our language L over infinite words only is definable in this fragment, but over infinite words only, then if we take then we have some formula. If you take the same formula, then there could be some finite word models for this formula, and we have to exclude them. But we can do this using the max predicate, because we can say we can define the infinite words by saying there is no position where max holds. And so going from for the opposite direction, going from infinite A to omega A, it's if L is already a language over infinite words only, and we have some formula here, then of course this formula can use the max predicate. And but essentially what you can do is you just cut out all finite word models, which means we can replace max by false. Every occurrence of max is replaced by false, and then we get a formula defining the same language, but it's in this fragment. So the situation for this B condition is very similar. So suppose we have a language which is definable in this fragment, then what we do is we replace, in some sense, all terms with this omega by infinity. And now we have to cut out all finite words we have added, but we can do this saying some finite words have some last position, and again we can use this using notation to define gamma to the omega. And also I don't want to go into details with the topology, but again it's the same kind of reasoning. And also similarly we see that actually, the almost same proof shows that the infinity theorem also implies the star theorem, so the theorem for finite words. Let's turn to the question, why didn't I tell you earlier what V1 is? The reason is that it's rather technical, and we have to use some even more technical notion. So what is V1? So V1 is usually some class of semigroups, but we also have want to allow the empty word. Therefore, we have to use homomorphisms instead of just semigroups. But essentially, what we have to want to say is for all elements in M, we have for all elements X, Y, S, T, and all idempotents. An element is idempotent if E is idempotent if E square is the same as E. So if for all elements of this form, and there is some number n, such that this equality holds in our finite monoid. Now, as I said, we want to also allow the empty word, but we don't want to allow the empty word for these idempotents E and F here. So therefore, we have to work with this homomorphism. Now, this is some, let's say, rather technical condition, but as you can already see, we can effectively verify whether some homomorphism has this condition or not. We just choose all some arbitrary elements in our finite set M and some idempotents also in a subset of M, and we for all of them we verify this condition for some and for all M in this range here. So we can verify this algebraic property, and usually in our triangle, if you remember, the most difficult part is going from algebra to languages in almost all cases. And if you want to go from this algebra to languages, then you have to, exploit your algebraic properties a little. And our starting point was the following lemma. So it's just some simple property, but maybe shows you how you can apply this kind of thing. So you have some homomorphism in V1, you have some elements in M, and some non-empty idempotents. Then we have the following implication: if U is the same as UE, is the same as whatever, and V is the same as this one here, then we can substitute X by S. So maybe that's not too surprising for you, or maybe it's also yes. So for us, this lemma has been the starting point. So the most part of the paper is devoted to guarantee, let's say, these premises here. So this is the difficult part, but so the lemma itself is very easy. So if you consider UXV, then we can insert the E here, because U is the same as UE. You can insert F here, because V is the same as FV. Then we can pump these EXFs, and we can also pump the TESFs at the end, which gives us this element here. Then we can apply the B1 property, which means that we can replace this X here by S. Everything else remains unchanged. And then we do everything backwards, and we get the USV. So this is just to give you some flavor of, let's say, the starting point of the proof. So I can give you more details in this 30-minute talk. But let me come to the end and give you some idea what our next project. So as I told you, the borderline is are these fragments, and we would like to extend the two-letter case also to infinite words. And moreover, we would like to consider fragments of temporal logic, so in particular the Antel-Sins hierarchy, which is known to be decidable over finite words, which means you alternate Antel and Sins, and you want to know how many alterations you need to express some regular language. And the other kind of question we are interested in, so here we have just said, okay, we want to know is it decidable or not, but of course we would also like to know how easy or how difficult is it to decide, and there is some approach called forbidden patterns which works over a deterministic automata for finite words very well, and we would like to see whether it extends also to a deterministic automata over infinite words, for example, with a Müller acceptance condition. And also, we would like to know what happens with a non-deterministic automaton. Thank you.